month at the fastest pace in 4 years, up 15% from August. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and so glad that you joined us on today's broadcast. Great to have you along with us. On the broadcast today, I've actually titled it, I'll give you the title here in just a minute, out on our blog post on sermonaudio.com. But I did so. I originally had a different guest set up in the beginning of the program today. We were actually going to be speaking with Lee Jones from World Magazine. And we decided, because of a breaking news story, that we were going to try to see if we could make a switch. The story that that I'm speaking about is something that relates to, it relates pretty close to home here, because it relates to a conference that took place right here in the upstate of South Carolina, right here in Spartanburg. It relates to the station here somewhat, because the morning talk show host, Tony Beam, the vice president of student services at North Greenville University, and one of the persons responsible for putting on the conference, they did a great job of putting on the conference, is mentioned in the story as well. Now, I want to tell you right away, he's not mentioned in a bad light, just as collaborating evidence of what the story reveals. And so we decided to switch gears. We wanted to get the author of the story, Warren Cole Smith, on the program with us here today to talk about what was written. I also have queued up a little bit. Tony did speak about this issue on the morning show this morning. He hosts the Christian Worldview Today program. He has me sit in for that program periodically when he's going to be out of town or so or so forth. But he did, after talking about the debate last night, took up most of the program with that, but towards the end of it, he did make a few comments about this article and about what took place, a couple corrections, minor corrections, timeline corrections, but we'll hear that as well during our course of the discussion today. I titled the broadcast today, Inglorious and Glorious Ruin. I'm not predicting the ruin of Dinesh D'Souza as a part of this story. I'm just saying that the event that took place was not very glorious in and of itself. The glorious ruin part in the title relates to the second half of our program today. I'll be speaking with Tully and Trevigen. I think a lot of people in our listening audience are probably familiar with Tully. He is now the pastor of Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church in Florida. And he is also speaks a lot at, he has his own conferences, but he speaks a lot at the Gospel Coalition conferences. He's had a lot of books out that have been extremely popular in the Christian and evangelical circles. And he's got a latest book out called Glorious Ruin, How Suffering Sets You Free. And Tullian is actually going to be here in Greenville tomorrow. I tried to see if we could have him come right over for an in-studio interview to talk about not only that book, but what the tour is all about. And he wasn't able to do so. The flight doesn't get in until a little bit after the radio program, so we weren't able to do that. However, I'm going to catch him. He's actually flying today as well, and I'm going to catch him in between flights. Hopefully, we're going to catch him there in Charlotte, about to catch a transfer flight, so we'll see how that works out. But he's supposed to come on with us at the bottom of the hour in order to talk about this book. It's from a unique perspective, and I think it's going to be very interesting. And by the way, I'm giving away tickets to the event tomorrow night. I'll be giving away a couple tickets on the program today, and so you have the opportunity to receive those tickets. And the way that you get them is by your participation in the program. I'll go ahead and draw from the people who submit questions or comments for Tully, and those who call in both will go ahead and select a winner out of that group. The number here is 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. And the email address is kevin@knowingthetruth.org. I said during the first half of the program today, I want to speak with Warren Cole-Smith. He's the VP of World News Group. And just yesterday, Warren broke a news story about some very serious questions being raised about actions of Dinesh D'Souza and his fiance at a recent Christian Worldview conference held right here in the upstate of South Carolina. D'Souza, we should say, is the president of King's College, and he's also the producer of the very popular film 2016, Obama's America. And the question being raised is, will what happened at this conference, will this incident bring about ruin to the D'Souza's career, obviously as his position there at King's College, but also other ramifications as well. Here to talk to us about that is Warren Cole-Smith. As I mentioned, Warren wrote an article yesterday. It's entitled The King's Crisis, or King's Crisis. And what he means by that is he's related to the fact that D'Souza is the president of King's College, and they are asking questions as well, the board of directors there at King's College. With that, Warren, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Kevin, thank you. It's good to be with you again.
Warren, I wanted to let you go ahead and set this up yourself with what you wrote. Not only were you at the conference, but I was at the conference myself. I sat there and watched Dinesh D'Souza. I saw him and his fiance enter the room and her sit in the front seat while he was giving his speech there at the conference, and then, of course, followed by the showing of 2016. You yourself were in another building, I think, for most of the event because they had two buildings going simultaneously. But I wanted to give you the opportunity, Warren, to give us what you wrote here yesterday in this story. It's now been picked up by a number of other news sources as well. And so it's I just want to hear you explain it here for yourself.
Well, the story as you rightly said, originated at that conference, and it was really, you know, I didn't seek out the story. It was just because I happened to be, as you said, one of the speakers there along with Dinesh that I even became aware of it. Dinesh D'Souza arrived at the conference with a young lady and who he introduced to several people as his fiance. That was surprising to some of us because we knew that Dinesh was married to the former Dixie Brubaker and Dixie D'Souza, and so it was a surprise to some of us that he was introducing this young lady, Denise Odie Joseph, as his fiance, and a couple of days later after the conference, I started, making some inquiries about that, and including an inquiry of Dinesh himself. Felt like it was important to go directly to him, so we talked on the phone the Wednesday after the conference, and he admitted to me on the telephone in an interview that she was indeed his fiance. He told me that he had been separated from his wife for a couple of years, apparently since about August of 2010, which is just about the time he took over as president of the King's College. He also said to me on that phone call that Andy Mills, the chairman of the board of the King's College, knew about his separation. And Andy Mills subsequently confirmed that through a spokesman. And all of that is reported in the story. And as you rightly said, we posted that story yesterday on the World Magazine website, and it will appear in the upcoming issue of the magazine.
Mm-hmm. So the issues relate to, first and foremost, a number of people being surprised that Dinesh D'Souza was divorcing his wife. Is that the first part of the story?
Yeah, that is. I mean, and in fact, whenever, Dinesh, whenever I found out that he was had introduced this woman as his fiance, I actually went to the website of California Superior Court in San Diego County, which is where Dinesh and Dixie were living, and checked the website. The divorce filings are public records, and so I went to the Superior Court there to see if a divorce filing had been made. It had not. Whenever I originally checked, I don't remember the day now, but it was either Monday or Tuesday that I checked. And subsequently, when I talked to Dinesh, I believe it was actually on Thursday that I might have said Wednesday a moment ago, but I believe it was now on Thursday following the conference that I actually spoke with Dinesh. He said that he had indeed filed for divorce. I asked Dinesh when he had filed for divorce, and he said recently. Hmm. So after that phone call, I went back to the court records, went back to the website and checked again, and in fact, he had filed recently. He filed on October the 4th, which, sometime between, his appearance at the conference over the weekend and October the 4th, he had indeed filed for divorce. Now, California is a no-fault divorce state, and what that means in practical terms is that no reason for the marriage dissolution needs to be given. There was none. It just said dissolution of marriage and the filing date. And because it is a no-fault state, what happens next is that 6 months go by, and then the divorce is final. So the reality is, and this is where, this is, I guess, at this point where we made a decision that this was, newsworthy and probably warranted a story, was the fact that he was, representing to people that he was engaged to a woman when he was not yet divorced from his current wife. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that we started, continued reporting on the story. And, you can see that reporting, in the additional information that we have in the story.
Right. Not divorced from his wife, because obviously that six-month period hadn't taken hold. But was he also, when he was first introduced, had he even filed for the divorce at that time? In your timeline there, would he have filed already or no?
Well, apparently not. I can't say with certainty whether the proceedings had not been started.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all I know is that, all I can say with certainty as a matter of fact is that the filing did not post on San Diego County Superior Court website until October 4, which was after he was representing that he was engaged to Miss Joseph. I would also say that in subsequent communications that I had with Dinesh, that one phone call that I had with Dinesh was the only phone call that I was able to get with him. Subsequently, he sent me a couple of text messages, and then I was able to communicate through a spokesman for the King's College, Mark DeMoss of the DeMoss Group, who's a well-known, well-known Christian PR person, and Mark DeMoss confirmed to me that Andy Mills, the chairman of the board of the King's College, did indeed know about the marital troubles for a couple of years. And according to DeMoss, and this is reported in the story, that while the divorce was, or the marital troubles were obviously tragic, anytime a marriage breaks up it is,
sure.
That Andy Mills had said that both he and Dinesh had been praying for reconciliation, were hoping for that end. So that was apparently why, and I don't want to speculate about this, but that was apparently why, Andy Mills, though he knew about this for 2 years, chose not to, go public with it, was because, they were hoping, and I think that's a fair and reasonable hope that there would be some sort of reconciliation in the marriage. And Dinesh D'Souza subsequently sent me a text message. Again, I reported this in the story. Sent me a text message saying that that he had suspended. His exact word was suspended his engagement with Denise Odie Joseph. So apparently, as of now, Kevin, Dinesh is not engaged. They've suspended their engagement, and I guess that would be, pending, events unfolding.
Right. So there's that issue, the divorce and what took place there, which, again, obviously many couples have marital problems, and we're glad the way that they talked about it, that they were working towards reconciliation, and obviously Christians would understand that, and we would applaud efforts to do that, to reconcile the marriage. The problem then obviously comes in with introducing her as his fiance, number one, when he's they're still married, he's still married, and not legally divorced, or it may not even have filed for divorce at that particular time. And then the second problem becomes that at the event, then, that they stayed in the same hotel room at the event, and there doesn't seem to be little question about the accuracy of that fact, right? Dinesh acknowledges that, acknowledges that, and there's no question about the fact that they stayed in the same hotel room.
Well, I will say that there probably is some lingering question about that. Dinesh, in an interview with the Associated Press subsequent to my story breaking, we posted our story on the World Magazine website yesterday morning about 11 o'clock in the morning. And since then, as you might imagine, Kevin, because Dinesh is a public figure and because of he has a book on the New York Times bestseller list now, he has this movie that you referenced, Obama 2016. You know, it has evolved into, a story that has generated a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. The Associated Press did a subsequent brief, according to the Associated Press account, brief interview with Dinesh D'Souza, and he denied that they spent the night together in the hotel. So, just for the record, state that that our story suggests that he did. We did not assert definitively that Dinesh and this woman spent the night together in the hotel. Mm-hmm. We simply laid out the facts as we knew them. The fact was that that Tony Beam, who you mentioned, delivered Dinesh and his fiance to the hotel sometime around 11 o'clock at night on Friday night. Delivered them both together to the hotel. There was one room reserved for Dinesh. Mm-hmm. There were no other rooms available in the hotel. The hotel was sold out.
Right.
Tony Beam picked up Dinesh and Denise the next morning sometime around 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And took the two of them to the airport. They came down on the elevator together, according to my interview with Tony Beam.
Right.
I want to say that it is possible that sometime after Tony Beam delivered them to the airport, Denise could have gotten in a cab and gone to another hotel.
But you also quote Alex McFarland as saying that he had a conversation with D'Souza, and D'Souza admitted he shared a room with his fiance but said nothing happened.
That's correct.
Okay, so Alex McFarland says that they said that they did stay together. Well, let me go ahead and play just Tony's comments real quick. He just clarified a few minor points here and just gives a firsthand account of what he saw and heard and why he didn't. He was talking about being engulfed in the details of the conference himself, and at first, didn't really see the significance of what was happening until a little bit later. Here's his comments.
Finally, near 11 p.m., event organizer Tony Beam escorted D'Souza and Joseph to the nearby Comfort Suites. Beam noted that they checked in together and were apparently sharing a room for the night in the sold-out hotel. The next morning around 6 a.m., which is not correct, it was around 4:30. They had to be at the airport at 6. Beam arrived back at the hotel and called up to D'Souza's room. I did not call personally. I asked the person at the desk to call up to his room and just announce that their ride to the airport was there. We'll be down in 10 minutes. Actually, what he said was, give us 10 minutes. That's what the woman who called the room said to me. I want to be clear about all of this. Give us 10 minutes is what she said to me, was the message. D'Souza and Joseph came down together, and Beam took them to the airport. That's true. That's factually, and out with the corrections that I made, that's exactly what happened. The next day, another conference organizer, Alex McFarland, distressed by D'Souza's behavior, confronted him in a telephone conversation. D'Souza admitted that he shared a room with his fiancée, but said, quote, nothing happened. When I called D'Souza, he confirmed that he was indeed engaged to Joseph, but did not explain how he could be engaged to one woman while still married to another. When asked when he had filed for divorce from his wife, Dixie, D'Souza said, answered, recently, was the answer that he gave. Now, this is Warren Smith, the writer of the story, talking to Dinesh on the phone. According to San Diego County, California Superior Court records, D'Souza filed for divorce only on October 4th, the day I spoke with him. Under California law, that starts the clock on a six-month waiting period for divorce. D'Souza, on October 4th, told me his marriage was over, and he is sure that Denise is the one for me, and said he had done nothing wrong. The episode is a strange twist in D'Souza's otherwise meteoric rise in the evangelical world. It goes through and talks about all the things that he did. He gets about his speaking fees. D'Souza said King's board chairman Andy Mills has known about his marital trouble for at least 2 years. Mills confirmed that through a spokesperson, Mark DeMoss, who added that Mills was hopeful about restoration, and both he, D'Souza, and Andy were praying to that end. DeMoss said the King's College Board met by conference call to begin looking into the situation. D'Souza participated in a portion of that call, DeMoss said. Following that meeting on October 15th, D'Souza wrote in a text message to me, I have decided to suspend the engagement. The King's Board plans further discussion at a regularly scheduled meeting on October 17th and 18th, DeMoss said. So, that's it. That's the story. And, let me fill in a few of the blanks here, because my name is in this, and let me know. Alex's name is in it. When we realized we did not know, and I want to be absolutely clear, we did not know that he was traveling with a woman. We had no clue until he got. In fact, when he came down the steps at the airport, I was stunned, because I didn't know that he was traveling. But you know, you don't automatically think, wait a minute, he's traveling with a woman. We've only got one hotel room. Now, I guess I should have thought that way, but I'm picking up Dinesh D'Souza. I'm thinking Eric Metaxas was supposed to be on the next flight. Has he landed yet? I've got somebody there for him. I'm trying to tell Dylan, the student that was with me, now you need to stay and bring Eric, and I'm going to take Dinesh and his whoever he's with here, you know, back to the thing. So Dinesh walks up, introduces her to me as his fiance, and I met her, and congratulations. I totally forgot. When he was at North Greenville in 2006 or 2007, I think it was 2006, it might have been 7, but he was married. I mean, I remember seeing a picture of his wife and family, but I didn't remember
okay,
that.
I mean, I think we got to cut in right there. Yeah, he just goes into talking about the idea that because of the conference, and he just didn't think about it initially. When they did think about it, Tony had mentioned it to somebody else. They said that they would take care of getting another room, but the hotel was sold out, and that other room never materialized, apparently. And so there's where we pick up on the story. I just wanted to throw it back to you, Warren, just for, some final comments there on what you heard Tony say about this as well. And what does this mean going forward, I guess, for Dinesh D'Souza?
Well, I appreciate Tony's clarification of the timeline. I do regret that the timing was slightly off, but but I will say, you know, candidly, that I don't think it really changes the essential facts of the story. And you know, what I can say about going forward is that you know, the King's board is meeting today and tomorrow. They will apparently be. This is a regularly scheduled board meeting for the King's College. This was not called just for this purpose, but I've been told by Mark DeMoss and others, another board member that I had a chance to chat with, not Andy Mills, this topic is going to be reprioritized to the top of their agenda list, and they're going to discuss it. And I don't know whether the King's College will be issuing a statement or taking any actions as a result of this, but we probably won't know that until late tomorrow at the earliest.
One side note to this story that I don't know if anybody is adding into their telling of the story on other news cycles, but Marvin Olasky resigned as the provost of King's College over the appointment of Dinesh D'Souza being appointed president. Is that correct?
Well, he did resign about the time that Dinesh was appointed president. I will say that the circumstances there are somewhat more complicated. I mean, the reality is that Marvin was dividing his time between World Magazine, where he is and was the editor-in-chief, and as the provost of the King's College. Now, for someone other than Marvin Olasky, who is just enormously gifted and productive, that would be those are two full-time jobs, and so the occasion of Dinesh's appointment, did coincide with Marvin's resignation there. But I will also, just add to that, you'll want to make sure I'm clear about this, that, we wanted Marvin to be the full-time editor of editor-in-chief of World Magazine. I mean, Marvin, I'm not going to speculate all about Marvin's motivations for leaving when he did. Mm-hmm. I will simply say that that we were delighted when Marvin chose to, resign from the King's College and move to Asheville and take over as the full-time editor-in-chief of World Magazine. So, I think it's a little bit too much to say that he resigned in protest because of Dinesh. It was a combination of factors, not least of which was the fact that, World Magazine is expanding and growing, and Marvin's the editor-in-chief, and he wanted to put both hands on the wheel.
Yeah, and I saw that when that came out, and the only reason I'm bringing it up is because it's just a connection between World Mag and King's College. Olasky was quoted at the time as saying that it dealt with the idea that Dinesh D'Souza and his Catholic background having a school that has as its statement of purpose roots in the Protestant evangelical tradition, that they would then elect or select a president who comes from a Catholic background when that is their stated mission or their stated goal as a college. So I just wanted to mention that in passing, just as a no implication there on anything. I'm just putting it out that it is a related story to what was taking place. Warren, thank you very much. This is never pleasant when this takes place, obviously, and we don't take any joy in it. But we equally, with conservatives and Christians specifically, we speak up and speak out about things, whether it's one from our own ranks, those that we find their writings, in this case, his production of that film, we find that something that we agree with, but nevertheless, we need to stand up and speak out when something doesn't seem to be right, and we'll follow this story and see what happens afterwards. But thank you, Warren, for the work that you guys do at World Magazine. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. Great to be on with you.
Have a great day. It was Warren Cole Smith, the VP of World News Group. We're going to be joined in just a minute. We're going to switch gears and talk to Tullian Trevigen. Tullian is the grandson of Billy Graham, but he's now the pastor of Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church. He's going to join us to talk about his new book and his new tour. Tullian's going to be right here in Greenville tomorrow night, and he's going to be speaking over at the Camelot Cinemas in part of his Glorious Ruin tour. I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Evangelicals, the media said, would balk at voting for a Mormon president. But has that prediction proven to be false? On the next Janet Mefford Show, Dr. Robert Jeffress joins me to talk about it. And what is the nation's largest abortion provider really up to behind the scenes? Jeannie Monahan from the Family Research Council will join me to talk about the facts behind Planned Parenthood's practices. That's all next time. Join us for the Janet Mefford Show.
This afternoon from 3 to 5 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Rain makes corn, corn makes a corn maze.
And we've got one waiting on you, friends, at Strawberry Hill, USA. You're sure to get lost in this year's Wild Wild West maze.
Or visit Daddy's Big Orange Hill. It's a 20-acre you-pick pumpkin patch.
Or come kick back and make memories on a good old country hayride.
We're a corn maze, pumpkin picking, hayriding kind of farm. Y'all come see us and make a family tradition.
Visit StrawberryHillUSA.com for more information.
Does science disprove the Bible? This is Ken Ham, a speaker and writer on the reliability of Scripture. Today we often hear statements like, science disproves creation, or science proves evolution. You know, whenever we hear such claims, the first thing we should ask is, what do you mean by science? When most people think of the word science, they tend to think of technology. But secularists also use science to mean molecules to man evolution, plus millions of years. To help sort out the confusion, we have to divide science into two categories. There's operational science, which means knowledge gained by direct observation, and there's historical science, which is based on interpretation about the past. Now, creationists and evolutionists both agree about observational science. The disagreement is over historical science, God's eyewitness account or man's guess.
Is the Bible really accurate on matters of history? Find out at our website, AnswersRadio.com. You'll see why you can trust the Bible at AnswersRadio.com.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the program today. We're switching gears just, pretty big turn to the right here on what we were just talking about a few moments ago. But we're talking now about a tour that is coming right here to Greenville, and it's a tour that is based around a brand new book that's coming out, or is out. It's out now. It's been released. It was just released at the beginning of this month. And the book that I'm referring to is the book Glorious Ruin. And that book is written by Tullian Trevigen. Tullian is now the pastor of Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And he's written this book. He's written many other books as well, very popular books. But this particular book, as you can hear from the title of it, deals with the subject of suffering. And with this dealing with the subject of suffering, Tullian looks at this book from a unique perspective. And so we wanted to get him on the phone here to talk about this issue. Now, I mentioned he's going to be right here in Greenville tomorrow. That's October 18th. He's going to be over at the Camelot Cinemas in Greenville here. And it's going to be from 7 o'clock p.m. till 10 o'clock p.m. tomorrow. There are music groups associated with that. Maybe Tullian can give us some information about that. I saw the names of the music groups that are going to be at all the events, but I don't know which one's going to be specifically at this event, so maybe you can help us clarify that. There's still an opportunity for you to get tickets. The tickets are $15 for a general admission ticket, and so you're going to have just a wonderful evening there together over at Camelot Cinemas. And I'm actually giving away a couple tickets on the program today. If you want to shoot me an email, kevin@knowingthetruth.org, or if you want to call in to the program today with your question or comment for Tullian about the subject of suffering specifically, and I'll give you that number, then you'll go ahead. We'll go ahead and draw out of those names and give away a couple of tickets so that you and a guest can go to this event tomorrow night. You don't want to miss this. I'm going to be there. It's going to be a great event. I've got other friends that are going to the event as well, and so it's really going to be a wonderful, wonderful night. That number here is 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Be happy to take your question or comment for Tullian today during our discussion. With that, let's go right to the phone line. Tullian, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks for having me back, Kevin. It's always a joy to be on the air with you. I've always enjoyed our conversation, so thanks for inviting me back.
Well, praise the Lord. Me too. This is a unique book, but not a unique subject. It's something, obviously, that suffering is universal, and Christians right now, in the sound of our voice, are suffering even as we speak. If they haven't gone through major suffering, get ready because it's coming. At some point, you're going through it. But there's a lot of books out there that are written about suffering. They seem to be written from a couple of different perspectives. How is your book different on the subject of suffering?
Well, first of all, I think you're exactly right in the sense that suffering is universal. Oftentimes when we think about suffering, we think about it in terms of crises or the big things, death, disease, depression, divorce. But what I wanted to make clear in the book was that suffering is much bigger and broader than that. I wanted to broaden the definition of suffering so that every single reader, rich or poor, sick or healthy, young or old, would be able to say, he's describing me, my life, my reality. Because in reality, suffering is also things like stress, anxiety, relational tension, shattered dreams, unmet expectations, things that everyday common people face all the time. Mm-hmm. In fact, because this world is not the way it should be, and because we are broken people living with other broken people, we have never actually experienced from our birthday to our death day an entirely pain-free moment. So I wanted to write a book that would help people understand, in essence, that the gospel of Jesus Christ touches down in the real lives of real people living with other real people in a real fallen world. So what I wanted to set out to do was to write a book on the gospel, on the necessity and the nature of the gospel, and discovered that the most direct route to talk about the gospel is down the avenue of suffering, because it's something that all of us can relate to. It's incredibly relevant to all of us. I'm currently going through a difficult season with my oldest child, my 17-year-old son, and it's just been very difficult for my wife and me, and it's been a real reminder that no one is exempt from pain in this life. No one is exempt from shattered dreams and from tension and frustration and all of those things, you know, that plague us on a daily basis. And so I wanted to write a book about the reality of suffering and specifically who God is for us and how God is with us in our suffering. And I think that's the unique angle on it. There are a lot of books. When I set out to write this book, I read Christian books and non-Christian books on suffering and saw that there were a lot of why books on suffering. You know, why, if God is good, is there evil in this world? Why, if God is good, is there suffering in this world? There were a lot of books written to answer the question why, or why am I suffering this way? Why this? Why now? Why him? Why her? A lot of books trying to answer why. And I also discovered that there were a lot of books trying to answer the how question. How can we harness our suffering to become better people? How can we use suffering to improve ourselves? That sort of thing. And while those books are helpful, I realized that there weren't a whole lot of books written on the who of suffering, the who behind our suffering. And so I really, really wanted to focus on who God is, as I mentioned, for who God is with us in our suffering, how God comforts us in our suffering, how ultimately what we need is God's presence with us in seasons of ache and not answers. Because when we ask the question why, at least when I ask the question why, the assumption is that if I have an answer or if I get more information as to why I'm suffering the way that I am, my heart will be healed. And we know that information cannot heal a wounded heart. Only God can.
Yes.
So that's really been my sort of unique angle on this. It's a very different kind of book, as you mentioned, on suffering. It's unlike any book that I've encountered. But I thought it was something that, as I'm a pastor and I talk to hurting people all the time, and this book was really born out of my need to provide people in our church with a resource for them to be comforted by who God is when they go through trying times.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that people understand the distinction that you were just talking about, and so I wanted to ask you just the fatal flaws in what is the fatal flaw in the why books? Why, to ask a why question, would focusing on the why be not sufficient in order to be able to go through this suffering in this life? And also then, what would be the fatal flaw in those books that address just the how? So apart from addressing what you were saying, the who in it, what are the two major flaws in those two other attempts that we need to be aware of so that we don't look for something that isn't either possibly obtainable, or we end up just attaching things to our suffering that aren't really gospel-related?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I don't know if I would describe why or how books on suffering as containing fatal flaws as much as they may be trying to address different audiences. Mm. So, for instance, I find it both intellectually and theologically stimulating to read books on why a good and sovereign God would allow suffering in this world. Mm-hmm. You know, those books are stimulating, and there are some really, really good books out there trying to address answers to those questions. I think for me, the danger in looking at a why book is really twofold. Number one, it doesn't really address the context of suffering or the reality of the sufferer. In other words, it tends to remain in the realm of ideas, which are good ideas. I'm all for engaging in the world of ideas that stimulates me, and I think it can be very helpful. But this book really is written to the person on the ground who is suffering and who's not so much looking for intellectual answers as much as they are looking for help and relief and counsel, those sorts of things. I think the other problem is that, and it's one I've already mentioned, is that oftentimes when we ask the question why, and more specifically, you know, why this? Why now? Why him? Why her? Why my son? You know, that sort of thing. We're assuming that if I have an answer, I'll get better. The pain will be reduced. And that assumes that information has the power to heal. And as we read through the book of Job, what's fascinating to me, absolutely fascinating to me, is that Job and his friends, you know, spend 30-some-odd chapters asking why. Why is Job suffering the way that he is? And they're all offering their pat answers to why they think Job might be suffering the way that he is. We, as readers, because we're privy to what happened behind the scenes by reading chapter 1 and 2, we know why Job is suffering. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not suffering because of anything bad that he's done and God's punishing him. He's suffering because the devil challenged God, and God wanted to vindicate Job, and God wanted to vindicate himself and wanted to defeat the devil, and so he allowed the devil to afflict Job. But Job never knows that. His friends never know that. In fact, the entire throughout the entire book, we discover that God never, ever tells Job or his friends what really happened behind the scenes. He never answers the why question, ever, mm-hmm. ever. In fact, when God finally breaks his silence in chapter 38, after listening to these guys go back and forth, God breaks silence in chapter 38 and simply says, okay, you guys have questioned me, and let me question you. Where were you when I was forming the Earth's foundation? Where were you when I was telling the lightning where to strike and the thunder where to roll? Where were you? In other words, God shows up and answers their why question by simply revealing who he is. He never gives them details. And even if God had given Job a behind-the-scenes look, either before or after Job suffered, and allowed Job to see exactly why he was suffering, that would not have healed Job's hurting heart because he lost his family, because he lost his health, because he lost his wealth. I mean, that would not have, information would not have relieved Job's pain. Mm. And so oftentimes, in an attempt to answer the question why, we're making the assumption that if I just get more information, my pain will be reduced. And the fact of the matter is, information can't heal hearts. Only God can.
Mm. And is the message of the book then to submit to the hand of God, the sovereignty of God, that he knows best, and you're not going to know all the ins and outs of the infinite mind of Almighty God. And so in his infinite wisdom, he has designed at this particular time for you to go through this particular type of suffering for his own purposes. And therefore, we need to submit to what he's doing and not question him and just trust in him and put our thrust our dependence upon him in an even greater sense as we go through this trial and trouble.
Sure. I mean, the comfort that we receive by realizing that God is in ultimate control and he's good, even though he doesn't explain everything that he does, has been remarkably helpful to me as I've gone through various seasons of pain and suffering. I think my primary purpose in the book is to show that God is a God in the person of Jesus who suffers with us.
Mm.
God is a God in the person of Jesus who has suffered for us, that as Hebrews says, we have a great high priest who can sympathize with all of our weaknesses and all of our pain and all of our trials because he walked our road. He took on human flesh and frailties and actually bore the burden of brokenness. Life in a fallen, sinful world on behalf of sinners like me. And so my goal really is to point to the person of Christ as the suffering servant, the one who came to do for us what we could never do for ourselves. And in the book, one of the things that I do is try and show that if we do not go to our graves in confusion, we will not go to our graves trusting, that explanations are oftentimes a substitute for trust. And we can actually begin to depend on explanations more than we depend on Jesus when we're going through trying times, believing that explanations can save us when in fact they can't. Only Jesus can.
Mm.
So, as I said before, I think my primary goal was not so much to write a book about why God allows suffering or even how we should approach suffering. But it's more a book about the tremendously liberating and gloriously counterintuitive truth of a God who suffers with us and for us. And it's a book, in other words, about the kind of hope that takes the shape of a cross.
Mm. That idea of the sympathizing of the Lord Jesus Christ, I think, is an important element that is often overlooked in the Christian life. I think if many Christians were honest, they would say that when they're going through difficulty that, well, you know, God and Jesus, they know I'm going through this, but they don't really understand what I'm really going through here because, you know, he was the Son of God when he was here upon the face of the earth, even though he was in human flesh. And so he could kind of just deaden the pain or make things go away or something, and he really didn't feel it. But the scripture goes to great length in order to put forth the point, I put it this way to my congregation, that he was man so that he could sympathize, and he was God so that he could satisfy, that the union of the person of Christ in human flesh with the second person of the Trinity was unique so that he was made that way for one purpose. There's a few purposes, but one in general is the idea that so that he could actually feel pain and sympathize with us. That's an extremely important point, isn't it?
I love that sentence. I'm going to have you give it to me again so I can tweet it later. That is a tweetable sentence right there. I love that. That was so good. Say that again.
He is man so that he can, so he could sympathize, and he was God so that he could satisfy.
That is so good. That's really, really good. And, you know, I think you're exactly right. And that's been a struggle for me. You know, okay, seriously, how much could Jesus really sympathize with me? Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus did not live in an age of technology where there were all kinds of temptations for our children. He did not live in, you know, a world where there was telecommunications, where there were constant distractions. I mean, what I'm facing today, Jesus never faced. So how can he really sympathize? That's a very real question, and I've been asked that question as a pastor on numerous occasions. And I think it's super important, as you point out, to realize that underneath all of our circumstances, whatever they are, however our context has changed since the time that Jesus walked on this earth, the undergirding problems that ultimately cause joylessness in our pain remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that, you know, we suffer. We suffer because of our own sin. And at some level, we suffer because we live with other sinful people. And we also suffer because we live in a broken world. But our suffering in that sense is somewhat limited. Jesus' suffering was unlimited in the sense that he, according to the Bible, I mean, he took on the brokenness of our world, not just the brokenness of me and my wife and, you know, the difficulty of living in a fallen world. He took on the brokenness of the world. He really took on hell for sinners. And so I usually make the point with our people that he suffered in greater ways than we could ever imagine, because the weight of brokenness that was on his shoulders was far greater than the weight of brokenness that will ever be on our shoulders. And he experienced not just the surface stuff that we experience. He experienced the deep stuff. He really went to the root of the problem.
Exactly.
And took that on his own shoulders.
Yeah, just for our listeners' sake, let me just say, have you know, you ever felt betrayed by somebody? The Lord Jesus Christ was betrayed.
That's right.
They all forsook him. His own disciples forsook him. And, of course, he was betrayed by one that was very close to him, even Judas Iscariot. Have you ever felt like the heavens were brass and you weren't getting any sort of an answer? The Lord Jesus Christ prays three times in the garden, and no answer whatsoever comes from heaven, which he then concludes that it's the Father's will for him to drink the cup that has been put before him. But he felt the same things that we feel in those broad categories. It's the same during the time of Christ as it is with us as well. We got to run to the phone line very quickly, and then I just have a minute or so to give you to tell us about the program tomorrow night. But let's see what's on Bob's mind. Bob?
I'm wondering how and when do we teach this in a church environment where you got unsaved and saved, and the unsaved's probably going through a lot of trials right then, and to hear he's going to suffer more. You know, how do you teach that?
Well, what you do, Bob, is tell them that when they come to the Christian life, they'll never again have any sort of trial or trouble in their life. I'm just kidding, Bob. We got to let you go, but we'll get Tully in to answer that and then tell us what's going to take place tomorrow. Go ahead, Tully.
There are a couple of very large churches in our country that do just that and seem to be doing it.
Yeah, if you want numbers, if you're interested in numbers, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I think the best way, at least for me, that I've been able to deal with this inside the church with both Christian sinners and non-Christian sinners, we need to keep that in mind, first of all, that preachers stand before a pack of sinners every Sunday, whether they're Christians or not, so they both need the same thing, which is the gospel. But one of the things I try to do is describe for people that life is already hard. When I start giving personal examples of ways in which I have felt misunderstood, ways in which I have felt rejected, ways in which I feel tension, ways in which I get stressed,
whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian, everybody in the room begins to relate to that. They begin to relate to the fact that, yeah, we are broken people living in a broken world with other broken people.
I'm sorry to interject, but the music means I got a hard break right at the end here, so I can't do anything about it. I apologize. I want to give the information and the website to people to go out there to find out more, but thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow right here in Greenville, okay?
Thanks, Kevin. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, tell him. I was telling Trevision he's going to be right here in Greenville tomorrow. Camelot Cinemas, 7 o'clock tomorrow. You can still get tickets. Just type in Glorious Ruin Tour. That's Glorious Ruin Tour. Select the one for Greenville, and you'll get all the information. Remember this. Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life and Liberty Radio, Christian Talk 660. WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660 and also on FM 92.9.